BBC.
Sport from the BBC.
The lucky ones are clutching their tickets very tightly indeed as they make their way to Soccer City.
The greatest competition.
Nadal is Wimbledon champion for the second time.
The greatest competition.
Nadal is Wimbledon champion for the second time.
The greatest athlete.
Mark Cavendish goes for the victory and nobody can live with it.
The greatest coverage.
He's the daddy, Louis Oosthuizen.
On radio, on TV, online and on your mobile.
Well, what a finish.
From the BBC.
Sami Yusuf sells millions of records across the globe. What makes him Islam's king of pop? Find out in Muslim Superstar, Friday at bbcworldservice.com.
This is the BBC in Shanghai.
Bangalore.
Melbourne.
New York.
Wherever you are, you're with the BBC.
It's 16 hours GMT. I'm Paul Henley. This is Europe Today from the BBC. Coming up, have we got definitive proof of a European economic recovery?
In my company, I actually do feel a change because we are highly influenced by the economic growth and therefore it's good for our company, but not for my salary at the moment.
Why some countries are doing better than others. 7 years after his death, the new questions about whether the British UN weapons inspector David Kelly really did commit suicide.
What we are unhappy about is first of all the medical explanation, which is inadequate and exceedingly unlikely medically.
The strange attraction of Europe's Arctic North and halal holidays in Turkey. Are they a specialism too far?
How would we feel if there were Christian white-only holidays? We would be appalled.
That's all coming up after the news.
BBC News with Gaynor Howells. The German economy, Europe's biggest, has shown its best three-month growth since reunification over 20 years ago. It was mainly spurred by exports, but also by strong sales at home. Overall, the 16 countries using the euro grew more than expected by 1% faster than the United States. From Brussels, Ben Shaw.
On the surface, the numbers from Germany ought to produce big cheers throughout the capitals of the rest of Europe. Not only has the biggest economy in the region posted a record 2.2% rise in GDP, some of that increase has come from German shoppers opening their wallets and spending, which ought to help its neighbours. But beneath the headline of Germany, France's rise of 0.6% is unspectacular, and Spain is barely keeping its head above water with a GDP rise of just 0.2%. The fear is that Europe is actually fracturing into a two-speed economy, with Germany powering ahead and southern Europe struggling to keep up.
A military court in Sri Lanka has convicted the former army chief Sirat Fonseca of involvement in politics while in uniform and has given him a dishonourable discharge. If the sentence is confirmed by President Rajapaksa, the general will be stripped of his rank and military honours. From Colombo, Charles Haviland.
A senior official in the president's office told the BBC that he understood there had been a guilty verdict against Sirat Fonseca. He's convicted of engaging in political manoeuvring before he quit the post of armed forces chief last November. An aide to General Fonseca described the verdict as totally unacceptable, pointing out that the defence lawyers haven't attended the trial, as this week was a legal holiday. General Fonseca led the armed forces to victory over the Tamil Tigers, but then fell out with President Rajapaksa. After retiring, he stood against Mr. Rajapaksa in the presidential election, but lost and was swiftly arrested. He has denied politicking while still in uniform.
International aid agencies say those who have survived the devastating floods in Pakistan are now at risk from potentially deadly waterborne diseases. A Red Cross spokesman said there was no clean drinking water available at all to millions of people. Mike Waldridge reports.
The risk of waterborne diseases was highlighted as soon as the extent of the flooding became clear. Now the Red Cross and other agencies are warning that the risk is growing and could well push the death toll from this disaster well past the 1,600 people estimated to have died so far. It's one of the most immediate concerns while the flooding is still in its most acute relief phase.
A German judge has set free on bail a suspected Israeli secret agent, wanted in connection with the killing of a Hamas leader earlier this year. Prosecutors in Cologne said the man, Nuri Brodsky, was free to travel wherever he wanted while court proceedings against him continue. He's accused of illegally obtaining a German passport used by those involved in the murder of a Hamas commander in Dubai. World News from the BBC. A cargo ship carrying hundreds of people believed to be migrants from Sri Lanka has docked at a naval base on Vancouver Island in western Canada. It's feared those on board may include people traffickers or members of the Tamil Tigers, which Canada regards as a terrorist organisation. The military authorities in Burma have set a date for the first general election in 20 years. It'll be held on November the 7th. The last election in 1990 was won by a landslide by the party of the now detained pro-democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi. But Burma's generals refused to accept the result. This time, 25% of seats in parliament are already reserved for the military. The staff union at Radio Television Hong Kong has reacted angrily to the government's appointment of a 10-member board to advise the broadcaster on editorial principles and programme standards. Staff and human rights advocates in Hong Kong say the board lacks expertise and could threaten RTHK's long-held reputation for editorial independence. The Hong Kong government, which funds the broadcaster, has insisted that its editorial freedoms are enshrined in a new charter. A crate of Scotch whisky, trapped in Antarctic ice for more than a century, has finally been opened. It was recovered from the hut of the renowned polar explorer Ernest Shackleton, who'd taken it to Antarctica on his 1907 expedition. It's been slowly thawed at the Antarctic Heritage Museum in New Zealand. Here's Elettra Naismith.
It's a whisky lover's dream, a crate dating back to 1896, described as being in remarkably good condition. It was taken to the Antarctic by the explorer Ernest Shackleton, something to keep his team warm and in good spirits. But the expedition was unsuccessful, the base and the whisky abandoned, until it was found 100 years later. The crates were frozen solid, but despite temperatures of minus 30 degrees Celsius, the whisky wasn't, delighting enthusiasts. Experts now hope to replicate the blend.
BBC News.
You're listening to the BBC World Service. I'm Paul Henley. Welcome to Europe Today. If you just went by the figures today, you might say that much of Europe had put its economic troubles behind it. The economies of no fewer than 16 countries that use the euro grew by 1% during the second quarter of this year, Germany leading the way. Its gross domestic product was up a very strong 2.2%, the fastest growth since the country reunified more than 20 years ago. But economists think that this quarter's figures will be about as good as it gets for the eurozone for quite a while, with many countries, especially Greece, Spain, Ireland and Portugal, busy slashing their public spending programmes. Today on this programme, we're going to be looking at what the economic news means for real lives in Germany, France, Spain and Iceland, among others. And Louise Cooper of our business staff is with me, making more sense of the figures. Louise.
I mean, as you say, the 16-country eurozone, 1% growth in the second quarter for the 3 months to June on the previous quarterly figures. Now, that actually compares really very well. It's a strengthening of the eurozone economy from the first 3 months of the year, and it's better than the US performance, which only grew 0.6%. And in fact, it's the fastest economic growth we've had since the financial crisis began 3 years ago. So this is all good news. It looks like it to be good news. But really, three quarters of that growth all came from Germany. This is a German story. And as you said, it is booming ahead. 2.2% growth, the fastest for 20 years. So, I mean, we talk about a two-speed Europe. I like to think of it a bit more as a three-speed Europe. You've got Germany powering along the fast lane in a Porsche. You've got France and Italy sort of bobbling along in the middle lane in a sort of mid-priced family car. And then don't forget Greece. It's parked, it's broken down on the hard shoulder with a little red warning triangle out.
Oh dear. Why is Germany doing so well?
Well, there are some one-off effects, weather, construction, building, things like that. But the story for Germany for some years has really been export growth. And that's within the eurozone and farther afield. So if you look at these numbers, in particular, they've done a very good job of selling capital equipment to China. So that's stuff that you use, equipment that you use to make other things. So things that go into factories, for example, and they've done a fabulous job of selling that. The other story with the with Germany is that it seems German consumers are back spending a little bit. Now, German consumers notoriously save lots and lots and don't spend enough, country of 90 million people, but it does seem they're feeling a little bit more confident and they are spending, so that's good news as well. Don't forget, economic power brings political power. This puts the German Chancellor Angela Merkel in a quite good position within Europe. You know, she had been criticised for taking a very tough position on government budget deficit. One could say, you know, she's now done a great job. And not surprisingly, therefore, the German government is pretty pleased. This is the economy minister, Heiner Brödele.
This is a highly pleasant development for Germany. Behind it is a huge effort by employees as well as companies who achieved a restructuring which made our products desirable. Exports are booming and investments are slowly but steadily picking up. Consumer climate is improving.
That's the economy minister. What are Germans making of their theoretical good news today? We've been asking people in Berlin whether the percentage growth figures translate into their lives.
In my company, I actually do feel a change because we are highly influenced by the economic growth, and therefore it's good for our company, but not for my salary at the moment.
I think it hasn't affected me at all. The whole downspin in general hasn't affected me, so hasn't the uprise today.
I think the background of globalization is very important, and we have to see this background to understand the whole system in the world of economics.
So, Europe's biggest economy, Germany, is officially booming, not really because German consumers are going on one big spending spree, but because the country's manufacturing exports are doing so well, and there could be a cloud on the horizon. Although unemployment in Germany is still above 3 million, industry is already complaining of skills shortages and urging the German government to allow more immigration, especially of highly skilled foreign workers. Jonty Blum has been to Berlin to investigate.
With the latest in computer-aided machinery working round the clock, Biotronics factory looks and sounds just like any other successful German engineering business. It employs over 5,000 staff making pacemakers and defibrillators and exports around the world. And as you might expect, when thousands of lives depend on it, the quality control is absolutely first class, as the company's managing director, Christoph Burmar, showed me.
These are parts, I can hardly pick them up with my finger because they are so small, that go into a lead connecting the pacemaker with the heart. These have wall thicknesses of 0.1, 0.05 millimeters, and tolerances need to be half a percentage point of that.
But like much of German industry, Biotronic has a problem. It needs more engineers, computer programmers and designers than it can possibly find. And in some departments, the shortfall is dramatic.
That's the design group and prototype and quality testing.
So that's the kind of area you have problems finding people?
That's where we're looking the hardest, that's right.
And how many more people do you think you could get in that office?
Oh, we probably have room for another 10 to add to the 20 that are in that particular space.
Of course, Biotronic and thousands of other German companies want to fill those posts with foreign staff, but it isn't easy. The hurdles are high and the red tape seemingly endless.
I have an undergraduate degree in chemistry and a master's degree in biochemistry. I've worked for a couple of years in the pharmaceutical industry and have experience in chromatography and analytical chemistry.
Patrick Baudet is a highly qualified Canadian who wants to move to Germany. But over coffee in a smart Berlin suburb, he told me how 4 months after finding a job, he was refused a German work visa.
I was devastated. I think I was fighting back tears. I'm here to be with my girlfriend and to be with my child who's coming in September. I want to be able to provide for them, and the opportunity that I've had to have a job and to work just seemed to be sort of crumbling before me.
You don't exactly get the feeling that even if you were accepted, that you're particularly welcome. Surely they should be biting the hands off people like you, because they're short of scientists and technicians and chemists and researchers and stuff.
No, I mean, it would be nice if that was the feeling that I got, but I almost felt like they were trying to outweigh me and that eventually I would give up and go back to Canada.
Patrick fell victim to the fact that skilled foreign staff have to earn 65,000 euros, over £50,000, a rule introduced to limit immigration to only the very highest qualified and most desperately needed workers. But the government is now coming under huge pressure from German industry to change those rules, because, as Alexander Wilhelm, Labour economist at the BDA, the German Employers' Organisation, explains, the latest figures available show that the limits on immigration are costing the country a fortune.
Just because all these positions for engineers and stuff couldn't be fulfilled, we had a loss in wealth in the year 2008 at around 29 billion euros.
So there is a danger to German economic growth in coming years?
Yes, definitely yes.
Germany isn't alone in having an ageing population and millions of unemployed without the necessary skills to find work. But soon, something will have to give. In the former East Germany, the number of school leavers has almost halved in the last 9 years. In 20 years' time, German industry thinks it'll be short of 5 million skilled staff. Pretty soon, Germany won't be struggling to keep immigrants out. It'll be struggling to find enough of them.
Jonty Bloom reporting there from Berlin, while our business reporter Louise Cooper is still with me. What is the employment situation like in Germany then?
Well, a few years ago, the number of unemployed almost got to 5 million. It generated an awful lot of newspaper headlines at the time. And now, as you say, we're down to around 3 million. So we have seen a big fall in the unemployment rate in Germany. And actually, it is relatively low to the rest of the Eurozone. Only 7% are without work. Now, the question, you know, as we heard in that piece, is whether that could be lower still. You know, are there structural impediments? Are there reasons why, the employment rate is sort of these long-term unemployed remain unemployed? Could the government take various actions, retraining, changing employment law, changing benefits, these so-called supply-side reforms that we talk about that could reduce it further? And in fact, the German economy minister today did actually allude to the need for reforms and did admit that changes need to be made to improve growth still. But to be fair, in the bigger picture here, having skilled jobs that need to be filled is a problem that many other countries in Europe would dearly love to have.
Yeah, and what's unemployment like in other European countries?
Well, not surprisingly, it varies. The big picture is we've still got a lot of public sector cuts to come, which may mean there are public sector jobs disappearing. So that's not good for sort of the public sector in terms of jobs. Let's just look at the worst, and that is Spain. Unemployment 20%, a huge 20%, the highest in the Eurozone. The government there is trying to overhaul labour market, make it easier to hire and fire workers, but encountering fierce resistance from unions. And particularly in Spain, it's youth unemployment is a very big problem. And then if you look at France, where, you know, it's known for pretty high labour productivity, unemployment rate is still pretty high, 10%.
OK, Louise, you mentioned Spain and France. Let's go to those countries for a moment. Our reporter First, Sarah Rainsford, has been out in Madrid checking the mood on the economy for us there.
Madrid can be a fairly sleepy capital city, even at the best of times. But in August, an awful lot here just closes down. People head to the coast, escaping from the stifling heat here. So you certainly don't feel like this is a dynamic, thrusting economy about to leap back onto its feet. But I've just come down to one of the pedestrianised shopping areas here. Let's see how people feel about this slight recovery in the economic data. I wondered if you felt that in your own life, if you think things are improving economically.
No, yo creo que todavía no. Ahora no lo noto.
He sees the situation quite stagnant at the moment with his family as well, and his job, he's a consultant, and he's not very optimistic.
Yo todavía no, o sea, no, de consumir y eso dices, de gastar así el dinero.
Whatever money he does have, he doesn't want to spend it because everybody is quite scared about what might happen tomorrow.
And in your case, I wondered if you felt that things were improving.
No, la gran mayoría no. O sea, la mayoría está, yo creo que cada vez peor, ¿sabes? También el sentimiento
de que most of his friends have been unemployed for the past year at least, that they have no perspectives of anything improving, that it's sort of quite a depressing situation because nothing is getting any better.
Por lo menos que yo conozco, caput.
As I walk up this street, I can see on both sides in the shop windows, there are huge signs announcing 50% off here, 60% there. I'm just going to go into this shoe shop, which is covered in signs announcing knockdown sales here to see if it's anything to do with the crisis. How are sales going this year? Are you seeing a bit of a recovery? Are people spending more?
¿Y cómo van las ventas este año?
Mal.
He says sales are down and that things are bad because people are afraid to spend. They'd much rather save. Therefore, things are going badly.
And the sales, all these great deals, don't help?
No.
Today there was some news that the economy was growing again, just a little bit, but it's growing again. Do you think that, Spain's on the path to proper recovery now?
Nah. El gobierno tiene que decir que va muy bien para que la gente consuma.
No, the government is obliged to say that things are going well to try and stimulate the economy and give people confidence to start spending again. However, it's not really working because things are stagnant now.
El consumo está muy estancado, está estancado, no sube.
So despite the slight improvement in the official economic data, there's still a very nervous and negative mood here on the streets of Madrid. And given the huge unemployment that there still is here and the fact that the government's announced a sweeping range of austerity measures, most people don't believe that even the small recovery that there has been is actually going to last.
Sarah Rainsford in Madrid there. Let's hear how people in Paris feel about what the state of the economy is doing to them there.
I won't complain about my own economic situation, but I can feel that's different from 3 years ago. I hope the economy will be better, but honestly, I'm not confident.
I'm a corporate lawyer, so in my job, I can see that Europe protects, of course, the French economy and all the European economies. So we will see, but pretty much confident.
I've been in an internship for 8 months in the firm I've been hired. So it was a great change because I was really worried about this situation. I knew that a lot of my friends didn't get a job. It was very hard for them to find one.
Well, I lost my job recently. So we are trying with my husband to move to another country.
I can tell you that we're absolutely not secure in the present economic situation. In theory, a lot of people think that in France it's very hard to fire people. It's not true. We know that the economic situation is not so good, so at 40 years old or more, it's pretty hard to find something new, a new job. So we are very anxious about it.
Some views from Paris there. We're in Reykjavik soon. You're with the BBC World Service. This is Europe Today. Still to come on the programme, we take a good sniff of a whiskey that lay in a frozen crate in the Antarctic for over a century.
And then I will stick my nose right deep into it, not on the top, right into the heart of the glass and allow the aromas to rise. And I'll be able to see a whiskey that's not been smelt for over 100 years.
More from the man they call the nose a bit later on. Now, no economy in Europe crashed more famously and more dramatically than Iceland's. When their banks failed 2 years ago, much of the international reaction focused on the thousands of investors and savers affected overseas. But at home, sudden unemployment was the biggest effect. And it still means there's a keen national debate going on about whether Iceland should become part of the Eurozone on a quest for the kind of economic results countries with the euro are showing today. Matt Cole now reports from Reykjavik.
Our man Johannesson is justifiably proud of his home.
I totally took everything out of here and took the roof down and rebuilt it all again.
Since buying it in 2007, the civil engineer has renovated almost every room.
I laid down here oak in all the rooms, changed the doors, rebuilt the ceiling in the rooms.
It's beautifully light and airy, with a very natural wood finish. You must be so proud of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's the best I have done in refurnishing my home.
But of late, Armand spent more time here than he ever expected, because at the age of 58, for the first time in his life, he lost his job.
It's very, very bad time. All the time, I did have a pain in the stomach and confused in the head.
Armand's story is now all too common here. Unemployment has never been an issue in this sparsely populated country, but in the last 12 months, it's risen to 8 times that level, from 2,000 to 16,000. Here at the Ministry of Social Affairs by Reykjavik Harbour, I've come to ask, was the government prepared for the unprecedented numbers needing help?
The short answer to that is no, we weren't.
Arni Páll Árnason is Iceland's Minister for Social Affairs.
Very much of our efforts here in the second half of last year were aimed at putting the structures in place to deal with this. The Labour agency was flooded with applications to begin with, and just processing the applications and making sure that everyone was paid benefits was job enough in the beginning.
Such was the need that the charity sector had to step in. Solveig Olafsdottir from the Red Cross gave a tour of a facility the organisation set up in Reykjavik's finance district.
So this is like a walk-in centre where people who have been affected by the economic crisis can come.
In addition to CV and resume classes, the Red Cross wanted to give people somewhere to gather to share their feelings, but it is more than a place for tea and sympathy.
Since providing psychosocial support is part of our recognized role in emergency situation, we decided to look at this as an emergency situation, and so this center was actually set up as a psychosocial support in order for people to come in here and to get counselling.
Arman Johannesson is one of those using the services.
We all here, we have the same experience, that the unemployment, depressed us down.
As Iceland struggles to get back on its feet, people here are all too aware they still have a debt to pay to the UK and the Netherlands. The Social Affairs Minister, Arni Páll Árnason, also fears the domestic implications of giving the money back.
It will definitely hit ordinary people, and it will definitely reduce our ability to come out of this intact. Undoubtedly reduce our ability to maintain here the welfare state and the welfare for provisions that we all, of course, want for our citizens.
That said, Mr. Árnason does think the recession is easing.
All the indications we see now are that we are close to the bottom of the recession, if not on the bottom. We've seen some growth in the last two quarters. It's our hope that we have seen the worst of this crisis.
For Arman Johannesson, it's all too late. Back at home, he's getting ready to pack his antique furniture for shipping.
This one is Danish from 1900.
He has a new job, but will have to move overseas.
I have got a job in Norway and starting the 1st of October.
Arman expects he won't return for a decade until he's old enough to retire. It's been a tough decision to make, but one he feels others might have to copy if they're to survive the new economic reality of Iceland's labour market.
Matt Cole reporting from the Icelandic capital. Let's just take a step back and look at the bigger picture as we round off our look at Europe's economies and the possible recovery. Louise Cooper's still with me. What is the outlook generally in Europe?
This is not over. Europe-wide, I think it's fair to say there are slower times to come. This may be as good as it gets. A lot of countries have yet to feel the full effects of the austerity packages that governments are introducing. So, for example, in the UK, the new government is having its spending review in October, and then we're going to get more detail of the public sector job cuts. So a lot of it is still to be implemented. In a global economy, there are some serious concerns about the state of the US. China, we know, is slowing. Those are sort of big export markets which will affect Germany. And if you look at today's figures, heavy reliance on just one country to produce the growth, and that was Germany.
And is that a worry that so much of Eurozone growth comes from just one country, Germany?
Absolutely, because if it starts faltering, then the whole economy across Europe isn't looking great. But more interestingly, it's a problem for the European Central Bank. They are trying to set interest rates for an economy such as Germany that is booming and to an economy such as Greece, which is collapsing. And that can be problematic. And when it can be problematic is when inflation becomes an issue in Germany. Given the country's history with inflation and the history of the Bundesbank, if that could be an issue in times to come. It's something to watch out for.
And what about those countries that are battling with big debts and still cutting their spending fiercely?
On average, their GDP, their economic growth, has been worse than expected. We've seen that in Spain. We've seen that in Greece. And what I think is very interesting is that these peripheral countries with this massive government debt are again finding it expensive and difficult to borrow. And they have to borrow a lot. They have got enormous borrowing requirements. And international investors are again demanding higher interest rates for holding Greek, Irish and Spanish government debt. The sovereign debt crisis is not over. It may come back. So that again, I leave you with that thought in your mind. I'm not terribly cheery tonight, am I?
Not really, but thank you. That's Louise Cooper of our business staff. And if postings on our Facebook site are anything to go by, there isn't much real optimism out there. We asked if people were seeing the economic good news where they lived. A couple of examples. Antonio Di Nutto in southern Italy says he isn't. And Ian Edwards says, I live in Spain and it's all gloom and doom here. You're listening to the BBC World Service. We're broadcasting live from Bush House in London. Stay tuned.